We are here at Treetops, where I visited the treetops, the tree trunks, most of the leaves, the base of a lot of trees, but we had a ton of fun. This may be the most challenging course that we played this week. We were on the Treetops Fazio Premier, and it was a great test of golf. And there's some real risk-reward temptations, and that's always a fun thing, especially if you blow your score early like I did, then you just throw caution to the wind and fire and fall back. And we had a lot of fun doing that. And we're joined by Alex Hughes, the sales director at Treetops Resort. Sometimes you just have days like that and you say, go for it.
Absolutely, guy. I mean, that's the game of golf, isn't it? Some days it's great and some days it's not.
Yeah. After four holes, I think I was one over par and I was cruising along nicely. And I thought, well, this could be a really, really good day. And then I took that six I was telling you about and the infamous four putt that will keep me awake tonight. But that's, you know,
that'll happen. I've had four putts out
just,
here.
Well, and I guess here's the thing. I mean, where I play most of the time, you're just not exposed to some of the extreme undulations that you see here. It's a different skill, and it's a good place to work that out.
It is, and we talked about, you even brought that up last night. You know, you're talking about, you don't see this undulation where you play. I mean, we played Treetops last night, the number one par three course in America and some destinations, and it's a 145-foot vertical drop on one of the holes. You don't get that downstate.
Yeah.
You get that up here, but not down there.
What is the secret to judging those kinds of extreme elevation holes? I mean, we've all got these little gadgets now that if they have the, you know, the algorithm for elevation changes, they can give us a number. But the number doesn't tell you, you know, if a ball is in the air that long, it's going to be subject to the wind a lot longer. So how do you make adjustments for that?
You know, that's a great point. It's usually the vertical drop, 60 to 70 feet, is a club, or is about a club. So think about it like that. If it's a 60-foot vertical drop, you're looking at about a club. 90, club and a half. But you have to do that wind math in there, too, as well, like we did last night on number three. And it just all depends on the wind. So you don't know half the time. That's the big difficulty out on these golf courses sometimes with the elevation. And people don't get it.
Now, forgive me. I've only played the Premier.
Yep.
And this is the second time. And I was so glad that I had played it before because there were some hidden things there that you really got to know about. And I was able to help Nick get around a little bit. But as you look at this Fazio course, you may have three tiers that you would be hitting to, depending on where you put the pin. Is that a hallmark of Fazio, or is that a hallmark of Treetops?
It's kind of both. It you know, you have it here at Treetops, but that is a Fazio thing. He does it, and you'll see bowl-shaped fairways as well, too, and he has that in his design on other golf courses, too. And the huge thing with Fazio is this is the only one in the state of Michigan, which is a claim to fame for Treetops.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and it's something that everybody, especially if you're a connoisseur of different design schemes, and that's a pretty good thing to have in your bag, and maybe the ball to have in your little display case that you've played the Fazio Premier. Talk to me about affordability for teams out there that are thinking about putting together a couple of foursomes and coming up for a guys' weekend, or some gals that are looking to do the same.
Absolutely, guy. I mean, we specialize all our packages. So if a group of four calls in and says they want to stay two nights and four rounds, we're happy to do that. If they want to come in and stay three nights and only play three rounds, we'll customize any package and make it affordable for them.
You're very competitive.
We are. We'll do some great off-season stuff. We have some 4th of July specials going on right now that we just came out with. Public tee times for during the 4th of July. You can get 30% off golf if you're just up in the area, which Northern Michigan's a huge vacation destination, 4th of July. So even if you're not staying here, that's the issue. A lot of people think, oh, Treetops, I have to stay there to play golf. No. Come out and play. We want you here. And you get 30% off your tee times right now around the 4th of July time.
Well, you're right. You have a variety of so many different places to choose from, whether it's staying at Treetops, Otsego, staying in town in Gaylord, or going west from here. Now, how many courses do we now have in the Gaylord Mecca? Because I know we've lost a couple and we've added a couple.
We're right around 17.
That's almost daunting.
It is.
As you're trying to go through the menu and plan out your golf trip. What are those in terms of skill level? I would say, based on the experience we had today, this is kind of at the pinnacle of the challenge.
It is, and you have that pinnacle with the premiere here and the masterpiece and signature at Treetops, but you also have it at Seagull Club in the Tribute. Very challenging.
The Tribute was one of the nicest surprises I've had in my 4 years on the golf tour.
Awesome golf course.
It's just something you don't hear a lot about. And that one, you know, if you were looking, I've been laughing, you know, if you pair golf courses like Meals and Wine, that's a good pairing.
Yeah.
You guys and Tribute.
And then you do have beginner. You have our tradition golf course here at Treetops that is, it's a link-style golf course. So it's wide open. Have the elevation changes. You go to Gaylord Golf Club. Very, very great golf course as well. Flat, but it's good for beginners too as well. There's a variety of tees on all these golf courses. And you don't have to play the big championship tees. Move forward.
Perhaps one of the most unique features that you have up here is the Three Tops, the par three course.
Yeah.
Which, and thanks for, you know, we came in late last night. I think we got off at around 6:30, quarter to seven. It was a beautiful Northern Michigan night. We had plenty of daylight to play with. That's an experience that is completely different from anything you're going to get anywhere else.
It is, Guy. And like, you know, I said, hole number three is a 145-foot vertical drop. Hole number seven is a 90-foot vertical drop.
And it's the famous Lee Trevino hole.
Lee Trevino hole.
The million-dollar hole.
In 2001. And even if you get on the green, which we saw last night, it's a challenge. Because the greens are very undulated. They're quick. And the really cool thing about that, you know, you can play it at 7 o'clock at night, and you're done an hour and a half, hour 45.
Compared to other golf complexes around in the northern lower peninsula, are you the highest? I mean, when we are at Treetops, are we in the Treetops?
Yeah.
Because it seems like your vistas here, boy, it's just a lot longer than anywhere else. I think the only other place where I have seen as far is out of Otsego's back porch.
Yeah, it's basically almost the same.
Not necessarily today with the Alberta wildfires, you do get the most. And all I can imagine is we haven't had the privilege of being here. I've had the privilege of going up I-75 in October. And seeing, you know, as you crest coming out, as you're headed to Vanderbilt and cresting on northbound I-75, that may be my favorite Kodiak spot.
I know exactly
in northern
what you're talking
Michigan.
About.
Yeah,
and those views in October with the leaves.
You got the right mix of spruce and maple and everything else out there, and it's incredible. I can't imagine what the leaf fairies have done for you in fall here.
It's almost, you can't even explain it, the views that you get with the colors and just the vistas everywhere around here, not just here in Gaylord, but all of northern Michigan.
So if you were to give a tip to somebody that's coming to Treetops on something to work on in their game so that they can enjoy it more when they get here, I would suggest finding a place where you're going to have some downhill putts with breaks and practice those.
Absolutely.
Anything else that you should work on before you come up here?
That's a great question, and there's a little tip out there that most of the greens break towards back to the clubhouse. So wherever you are, think about where this golf shop is here at the north. If you're playing the Signature Premier, think about that.
How do I find the golf course?
That's the thing.
How do I find the clubhouse from a grove of trees?
You got to kind of remember that it's mostly north.
Maybe I need. Can you have an app for that? The clubhouse finder. I'll put it on the phone. It'll help a lot.
And you know, the thing is like, you know, on most courses, people say it breaks the water. We don't have that around here.
Yeah.
So it's just like you said, find a green, play the downhill putts, play the break. That's the biggest thing. Have your putt, have your short game intact when you come to Treetops.
And you know, I worked really hard, and it served me well today because you do find yourself in some awkward places. Alex, it was such an enjoyable day, and you're a wonderful host, and you were great last night to take us out on the par three. And that is an experience that's a must do if you're coming to Northern Michigan.
It is a must do, and I tell all our groups, four golfers to 60 golfers, if you're coming to play Treetops, you have to play Treetops.
Yeah.
It's a must.
And you're right. And if it's all ages, because, you know, if you're hitting the ball only between 135, I think the longest hole we saw was 209.
Yeah.
You got one number two or
That's
something.
That's three.
Like that.
Yep.
Yeah. And other than that, it's not going to be a reach. It will be a ton of fun, and you're going to laugh a lot at yourself.
You are.
I chuckled a lot. All right, Alex, thanks so much. 3:15 on Newstalk 760 WJR. We know that I think it was Detroit had the second worst air quality in the nation yesterday. The Tigers had to shut down in Philly because of the air quality there. What is this doing to our lungs? What is it we need to worry about? And are we, when we're done with it, are we really done with it, or do we still have to be vigilant about the gunk that got in our lungs? We'll talk about it all with Dr. Abdul El-Sayed, the health director for Wayne County, next on The Guy Gordon Show. So by now, you've probably gotten up every morning and looked out your window to see what kind of air you're breathing. That isn't something that we're used to here in southeast Michigan, nor up here in northern Michigan where we are. Where normally, you truly, it's as far as the eye can see here. That's not the case today. You've got that kind of layered look as you look through a lot of the smoke that's still making its way down from the Alberta wildfires. And I think they got something like 3,000 of them they're dealing with up there. The question is, what is in the smoke? And I'm coughing because of a lingering cold, not because of the air quality. But I did download this EPA app that you can find at your app store. It's called Air Now. And it tells you, when you plug in your zip code, exactly what the parts per million are for fine particles, for coarse particles, for ozone, things like that. Right now in the city of Detroit, for those that may be compromised, we're at 131. That's considered unhealthy for sensitive groups. But let's find out how we're doing overall with our good friend Dr. Abdul El-Sayed, the director of the Wayne County Health, Human, and Veterans Services Department. Dr. El-Sayed, it was great seeing you up north.
Guy, it was a privilege to run into you. I'm glad to be back on the phone, although not under these circumstances.
No, not at all. I know this is something that you're monitoring very carefully. How are we doing in southeast Michigan today? I mean, I just checked the one zip code, and I'm sure it can vary from place to place.
It does vary from place to place, but overall, as you said in the windup, it's a lot worse than we're used to. We, for the most part, are lucky to have really good air quality. That, of course, is the case for most of this region, but there are a lot of communities that have really poor air quality, just considering that they're down a field from large polluters. And so we have to remember that if you're lucky enough not to have to worry about the air quality where you live, remember that there are communities that do. And, you know, unfortunately, as we think about where we're headed, these kinds of bad air days that occur more commonly now than they have in the past, unfortunately, they're a consequence of the change in climate and the climate crisis. And it's not supposed to be this dry, and they're not supposed to be this many fires in Canada. And we're not supposed to have bad air quality because of what happens in another country. But here we are. And I just want folks to appreciate that. And the consequences
right.
are really dire.
Well, and that's a good message to send. And there's no question that we're doing long-range things like converting to EVs and other things. But short-term, we also do need to do a better job of controlling the fuel sources that are in these forests and do better forestry management. We also have to adapt to these changes that already have happened, don't we?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And, you know, you talk about adaptation. There's a lot that folks in our community have to do just to protect themselves right now, right? You think about pregnant moms, infants, you think about children, particularly those with asthma. You think about folks with chronic illnesses, particularly lung disease or heart disease, and folks are at particularly high risk. And that is all because of a substance called particulate matter, PM2.5. And that's, you know, smaller than 2.5 microns. It's what's
right.
giving you that sort of hazy layered look. But that's the kind of thing that your body's natural defense mechanisms against bad stuff in the air can't catch, and therefore is particularly high risk. And folks really, really need to make sure that they're staying indoors as much as they can and protecting themselves.
So, I mean, yes, we have these particulates that we're concerned about, but what are the particulates made of? I mean, this is wood smoke fire. Is it more dangerous than what we might, you know, on a casual basis, consume while sitting around a campfire? And I did a little reading on this. Does it change as it makes its way down from Alberta and is exposed to UVA radiation?
Yeah, so that's the thing, is that we all know wood doesn't burn very clean. And there is, you know, chemical change that happens. But really, it's what we were talking about is just tiny particles of carbon ash. And, you know, when you sit next to a wood fire, you're getting the direct burn off and you're getting smoke, which you can see. The stuff that you can see is usually particulate matter 10, meaning smaller than 10 microns, and it's what colors the air. But the interesting thing is that our throats and trachea are lined with these things called cilia. They're like little fingers, and their job is basically to push upward. And they catch a lot of the PM10, And that's why, you know, if you've been sitting next to a campfire for a long period of time, the next morning you might be coughing up black sputum, and that's because your cilia are working. The problem with PM2.5 is that, A, because it's smaller, it drafts a lot further. It's less heavy, and so it gets carried a lot further. And B, is that the cilia can't catch it because it's too small. And so it really gets into the alveoli, which are like the workhorse little balloons in your lungs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they make you substantially sicker. And it's not just lung disease that we have to worry about. In fact, the worst consequence of PM2.5 is usually heart disease. And I just want to explain that for folks. When you breathe in a lot of PM2.5, it increases the resistance in your lungs. Now, you think about your lungs being, you know, tiny little bubbles or balloons that are wrapped with tiny little capillaries. When the resistance goes up, your heart is basically two connected pumps. And when your heart has to pump against the resistance of your lungs, it backs it up. And so that pump, your heart, has to work extra hard. And for folks who are with underlying cardiac illness, meaning, you know, sick muscle,
right,
that extra hard work becomes really, really bad. And so you see that the incidence of heart attacks in times like these go way up. And so it's really, really important that folks are taking efforts to protect themselves and their loved ones who might be vulnerable.
So I urge people to download, if you're concerned about this EPA AirNow app, because it does tell you, and it's as granular as you putting in your zip code, which, so we presume that there's monitoring that's fairly widespread here. And it will tell you what levels we need to worry about. Now, last night it was interesting. I checked my home because my wife is back there, and it was, you know, only if she was compromised was it a problem. When I checked again after midnight when I woke up, it was much higher. You would think at night those levels would go down, but they didn't. They got worse. How long can we be exposed to this if we're normal, healthy individuals? At what point do we need to start worrying? The length of exposure.
One way to think about it is that every hour of exposure at the rate that we're seeing here in Southeast Michigan is like smoking half a cigarette. The longer that this lasts, the cumulative impact of that gets worse. And so the longer this goes on, the worse it's going to be. And, you know, we talk about vulnerable or not vulnerable as if they're yes, no questions. But all of us in the end are vulnerable to the air we breathe. It just, the question is how vulnerable. And so the longer this goes, what we're going to see is that less and less vulnerable people are going to start suffering the consequences. The other piece of this is that, remember, you know, if you were to smoke a cigarette, and I just gave you that analogy maybe because it's helpful, but if you were to smoke a cigarette, you smoke it over a certain period of time, and then you go back to breathing regular air. But if this is the air quality you're breathing persistently over time, you're breathing it while you're awake, you're breathing it while you're sleeping, because in the end, the air in our house comes from outside in the end. The cumulative impact can be really bad. And so, you know, we've got to be thinking about protecting ourselves. One of the things that COVID showed us is that indoor air quality can be a real issue. And if you don't have an air purifier in your home, this might be a really good time to think about getting one. But certainly staying indoors, protecting yourself from, you know, vigorous activity outside, no matter who you are, even if you think yourself to be super healthy, it's not a good idea right now.
Good advice, Dr. El-Sayed. We thank you so much. And we should also point out there is literature out there saying that even after the danger has passed, continue monitoring your health because symptoms may come up that could be of a respiratory infection. Dr. El-Sayed, thank you and take care. And we will have more from the Gaylord Golf Mecca and talk to one of the purveyors of all things exciting on golf courses, but also in terms of lodging and entertainment that you can access while you're here. It has been a busy news week, and what better moment to pause and chat with our good friend Nolan Finley, editorial page director of the Detroit News, as we always like to on Thursdays. It's Thursdays with Nolan. Good afternoon, sir.
Is it Thursday again, guys?
Already. But that means we're knocking on the door to the weekend.
There you go. I hope you got out on the course today.
We did, and the course got on to me, too.
That'll do that.
they have a way of doing that. some interesting breaking news. The Supreme Court ruled Alabama's redistricting maps violated the Voting Rights Act, that they were biased, right, and there should be one more black majority congressional district. Two justices, Kavanaugh and Roberts, joining with liberals on this. This is coming from a court that's being criticized as illegitimate, and they're calling it a surprise verdict. Is it maybe time to reconsider those criticisms in light of things like this?
Of course, you'll wait till next week when they come out with the, or later, uh, this, ruling on Biden's college debt forgiveness plan, then they'll be right back as a radical court again. I mean, the left has been, you know, hypocritical about this court from the beginning. When it rules in favor of one of their positions, they're silent. When it rules against them, then the world is ending and time to pack the court and do all sorts of other things. This is not as predictable a court as its critics are letting on, particularly with Thomas and Kavanaugh. And, you know, you don't have a right-wing revolution in the courts as the left portrays. I mean, it's been a court that rules on issues.
It is not a monolithic political body, as the critics would like to have us believe, and perhaps they can at least retire that for the next 24 hours. though I won't hold my breath, especially with the air quality conditions we have. Closer to home, our Supreme Court is weighing whether or not it should use preferred pronouns in the courtroom rather than those that would be normally assigned at birth. It's nice to be courteous and sensitive. We want people of all stripes to feel like they get a fair shake and are recognized in our courtroom. But if it causes confusion, and confusion is an enemy in a court of law, is this a dangerous step, even though it may be well-intentioned?
Well, I think that's what the court has to consider here. I don't know. I don't know the legal ramifications of this. I think it's good the court is considering it and weighing it rather than just going headlong into it and saying, yeah, we're going to change, you know, so as not to offend anybody. But if, you know, again, I don't know what ramifications it will have. I mean, if you can accommodate people and not make them feel alienated in a courtroom, I think that's always a good idea. I've never really cared what pronouns folks use as long as they, you know, pick pronouns and stick with them, you know.
It's a golden rule thing. Whoever pronouns you want to use, I will try to do that.
That's right.
But it's a little different in the court of law where precision and clarity matter. You had a great piece on the distracted driving bill. The governor signed it yesterday, and I know you were hoping for some changes in it before it went that far. It starts June 30th, and it will, if you're holding your phone, you can be pulled over. You think the bar should be a little higher for the pullover?
Well, I think we should punish the behavior, not the potential for bad behavior. You know, some people can text, drive, talk, and do perfectly well. I can't, but
really, you know, who are those, Nolan? Because I have yet to see them.
Well, I mean, you're on the road every day. Most of the people going by you are doing something on their phone. I think there's a lot of things that can distract you: fiddling with a radio, eating a cheeseburger, putting on eye makeup.
I've done all three of those things at once.
Well, you see them out there happening all every day, and those aren't subject to a $200. Fine.
Right.
So why not just punish the results? If somebody's driving distracted, stop them, charge them, fine them. But if there is no erratic driving taking place, but we assume there might be because they're on their phone, then, you know, that bothers me. Punish the offense, not the potential for the offense.
You and your pages today welcome Rick Snyder back to the fray. Mm. He has rejoined the political wars, the former governor. He's leading the fundraising charge for Republicans trying to bring the House back under Republican control as he has watched much of his legacy rolled back in a mere 90 days. Do you think he can be highly effective in that? Because it does extend an olive branch to some disaffected members of the Republican Party.
He can do two things very well. I mean, he could raise a lot of money. He knows a lot of rich guys. And he can also speak to a lot of them who have decided to sit on the sidelines rather than write checks to a Republican Party under the control of a bunch of wackos. And so if Snyder can give people who want to engage politically but don't want anything to do with the Michigan Republican Party a place to put their money and an opportunity to elect the sort of candidates you might expect Rick Snyder to put his stamp on, I think that's a very positive thing for Michigan and for Michigan Republicans.
Well, he makes a strong legacy statement, and we had him on the other day with the All Talk guys, and you know, he's pretty frustrated because he feels like he accomplished a lot of good things, as do you and I, and we're watching it being not eroded, but kind of blown up.
Well, it's the Californication of Michigan, for God's sakes. I mean, they've got Democrats have the barest of majority in both chambers, one vote either way, and they lose that right. majority, and yet they're behaving as if they've got some sort of mandate to make this California or Oregon or New York or any one of the other progressive states out there. Michigan's a purple state, and they're governing as if it's, you know, deep blue, and it isn't. And, you know, of course, any time a party goes to the extremes like that, doesn't take in the fact that what voters really want is moderation.
Right.
You know, the overreach will cost them. And Rick Snyder's putting himself in a position to take advantage of that, I think. And, it, you know, this might be a route towards rebuilding the Republican Party.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of Republicans that would hope so. Some breaking news today from our friends at the Wall Street Journal that China is paying billions of dollars to Cuba to use it as a base of electronic espionage operations against our military installations in the southeastern United States. Alarming to say the least about the potential for mischief there, not to mention the eavesdropping. What should our response be to that, and what does it say that China feels that they can be so bold as to sit on our doorstep?
Well, China believes, and probably correctly, that we are so now economically dependent on them. They can do just about anything they want, and I think they're constantly testing how far they can go. And, you know, American corporations, the American people need to realize China is not our friend. And we have a trading partner now, a trading partner with whom we're very deeply involved, that is not our friend. And you know, that should impact our decision making in terms of our dealings with China. I don't know that it's wise for us to continue to enrich China when they turn those resources back on us.
Mm-hmm. But for the withdrawal from Afghanistan and the botched way in which it was done, and our lateness to confronting Russia over Ukraine, do you think that absent either one of those decisions and issues that they would be this bold? Or is this the consequence of one or both?
Would Russia have invaded Ukraine? I mean, the ineptitude of this administration on the foreign stage, I think, invites a lot of unsavory things and invites a lot of bad actors to test our resolve. The balloon was another example, perhaps smaller, but I don't think there's anything China thinks it can't do right now and get away with.
Yeah. Well, this is the power of many, many balloons sitting right on our front porch.
Sure.
And we're all remembering the Cuban Missile Crisis years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that this is on that scale, but it has the potential to be, especially if there's jamming capability that they,
sure.
that they have there.
I think information and electronics will be, you know, the way war is carried out in the future. Mm-hmm. You know, take down our systems, take down our communications, paralyze our electric grids, maybe more dangerous than the bombs Russia was putting in Cuba.
Yeah, we'll hope not. Nolan, have a wonderful weekend, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Guy.
So they give you all kinds of hospitality here at Treetops, and we were treated to one of their old fashions, which they infuse it with smoke, which I guess is a topical thing to do. But they've got these ice cubes bearing the Treetops logo. It's very, and it's from the Iron Fish Distillery that's up here, I think, in Thompsonville. And so it's one of those things. Go to, I think it's Club 81 when you're here, and treat yourself to one of those. It's just one of the little things that when you come to the Gulf Mecca. that you can savor and enjoy. Corey Crowell is the head PGA professional and general manager of the Indian River Golf Club, which is just about, what, 30 miles to our north or so?
That is correct, yep, 30 miles north.
Give me a sense of the character of your course and where it fits in. How old is it?
Well, that's a very interesting question because this is our 100th year anniversary this year.
Well, there you go.
So we have a lot of celebrations and a lot of promotions and stuff for our 100th year anniversary. So it's very exciting for us.
It seems there's a lot of clubs right now that are having their 100th anniversary. That seemed to have been the early 20s. Was this, you know, it was before the crash?
Right.
That there was just an explosion of golf construction in those
right.
days, and people had money to travel and enjoy it.
Yeah, that's right. Well, they called the Roaring Twenties, you know, so it was, and our course was designed by the same guy who designed a course here in Gaylord Golf Club, and he designed Indian Wood down in the Metro Detroit. So,
well, that's Wilford where we, Reed. Jeff Marshall and I host the March of Dimes golf outing there
right,
every year.
Yeah,
know
right.
Indian Wood very well. So that kind of almost a linksy field to some extent?
Yeah, well, so he designed nine holes back then in 22. It opened in 23. And the interesting part about our 100th versus a lot of places is we're still on the exact same piece of property. So the exact same land, the same trees. You can see the big trees that were there 100 years ago, and you can see, you know, the course has changed over time, and we've added the back nine. So it's a great 18 holes, but it's really fun to be and to figure out the history. And we actually have a member who really dug deep, and he wrote a book that's getting published this summer about the 100-year anniversary
Neat.
Of the Indian River.
As you, I mean, we have a similar thing with some friends over at Walloon Lake, where they've right. added a nine. That's I think they're maybe a little older than 100, but you can tell which are the vintage holes and which are the new holes, and that's kind of fun.
It is.
It's a fun game to play with your guests.
Yeah, it is fun. Yeah, it is fun. And one of the celebrations we're having this year in August is we're going to have a members' night where we try our best to recreate the original nine holes. I mean, you can still see the, you know, some bunker depressions, some green areas that we don't use anymore, but we're going to try to recreate the original nine and play a hickory stick open or something like that.
I was going to say, are you going to make me play with hickory shafts?
Yeah, right, yes, yes. Going to give it a go.
I'm not sure that it could penalize me any more than the shafts I'm swinging now. If at Indian River, if you're looking for level of difficulty, where would this place, where would you place yourself?
So it's fairly player-friendly. We have, you know, we've got six sets of tees, so you can kind of pick your poison. You know, I play from the back. I'm one of the few people that play from the back because it can be pretty tough. I mean, it's only 6,700 yards from the back, but it can be pretty tough. But
only 6,700.
Yeah, right. So,
with all the lumber you got out there, I would still imagine 6,700 is going to be a pretty good test for those of us that spray it a little bit.
It's very wooded, yes. It's kind of cut right through the Northwoods, and we say everybody loves Indian River because everybody really likes the course. You know, there's some course that, you know, give or take, you know, some people like it, some people love it, but everybody loves Indian River. So,
well, and if you call it player friendly, I sometimes think when you come up here, you better be ready. You know, you're going to be tested. You know, you're going to get, like today, I got a little bit beat up.
Yeah.
And you're going to be a little mentally weary over some of the putts that you have to hit up here. It's kind of nice when you're planning a golf trip to have kind of that, not a day off, but a day where you're not going to beat yourself up, where you can just go out with the guys or your wife and have a great round of golf and not feel exhausted at the end.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and you can do that at our place and then sit on. We've got a beautiful deck that looks right over the ninth green afterwards, so it's just a very relaxing day for sure.
Do you have lodging there, or do you recommend lodging off-site?
Well, we don't have lodging there, but, you know, we are part of the Mecca, so most any of the Mecca lodging deals with us, and, you know, they have the package deals, so whether it's at Seagull Club or whether you're dealing with Pinecone Vacations or, you know, any of the Mecca lodging places, they can build a package with us included.
And we should also point out with Indian River, if I'm not mistaken, you've got a canoe livery not far away. You've got a pretty good children's kind of adventure land there too.
So the great thing about Indian River, just the area, is the water. I mean, the Indian River itself is the river that goes between Burt Lake and Mullet Lake. And you can actually go, and those lakes are connected to Crooked Lake, you can go from Petoskey. You can't get all the way to Lake Michigan, but from Petoskey, from the edge of Petoskey, you can go through the Inland Lakes Waterway and go all the way to Sheboygan and all the way to Lake Huron.
Well, so you've also got some great places around there like the Douglas Lake Inn, Douglas Lake Bar, and Vivio's.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
I mean, there are some great old supper clubs there. And the other thing is, for people that want to fly up here, you can fly right into Pellston, and that's right in your backyard.
Sure is. Yes, it is. Yep. We pick people up there, and, yeah, it's a great – yeah, it's a nice thing to have available.
Yeah. So make that – put that on your list of places to go, Indian River Golf Club, and help them celebrate their centennial. Corey, thanks very much.
All right. Thank you.
You're on News Talk 760 WJR. And good afternoon once again, everybody. We're going to pause the golf talk for just a moment and talk about something that I consider to be a direct threat to our children and something that pollutes our society. The fine investigative team of Jeff Horowitz and Catherine Blunt at the Wall Street Journal, and I don't know if you had a chance to see this today, but they completed a long investigation along with some researchers from Stanford and the University of Massachusetts Amherst. And what they did was kind of creepy, but it was a legitimate investigation because they want to know that when your children go online or when adults with ill intent towards our children go online, that there are safeguards in place to flag them, track them, and hopefully prosecute them. But what Jeff and Catherine found instead is that when they plugged in sexually explicit hashtags that also combined a youthful suggestion that they were interested in sexually explicit material involving children. And, yeah, it's creepy to think of someone doing that, but you're going to find out why it was necessary. They found that they didn't get flagged. They didn't get a terms of service warning from Instagram. They didn't find the federales or local sheriff on their door. What they found was networks that were willing to offer them sexually explicit material involving children. It's horrific. Let me give you an example. They plugged in the explicit hashtag pedo whore and preteen sex. And what they got was a menu. They didn't get sexually explicit material sent to them, but they got a menu of content that they could choose from or suggest that they wanted from people willing to sell it, providers. They actually found that they were invited to commission specific acts that they wanted to see. Videos of children harming themselves or imagery of children involved in things that is just sickening. Basically, they found, this is the researchers at the Stanford Internet Observatory, that at the right price, children were even available for in-person meetups. Now, we are constantly told when they're hauled before Congress that Meta and others have these very sophisticated algorithms that are going to flag this type of behavior and that they are policing their platform and that they're committed to making this a safe space for adults and children and not a marketplace for child pornography. And in fact, when the Journal took this crap to Meta and said, do you see what we got here? A panel of providers, a network of providers, sought us out to feed us with this stuff because your algorithms led them to us. Meta said, and this is a quote from the Journal, Meta acknowledged problems within its enforcement operations. You think? And said it has set up an internal task force. that'll remedy it right away. To address the issues raised. Child exploration is a horrific crime, the company said, adding, we're continuously investigating ways to actively defend against this behavior. Now, they said in the last 2 years, they've taken down 27 pedophile networks, and they're planning more removals. And since the Journal told them of what they were capable of doing, the platform claims it has blocked thousands of hashtags that sexualize children, some with millions of posts. Well, if it was that simple, why on earth didn't you do it in the first place? Why wouldn't you safeguard your system by... It's not like you had to have a creative mind to do this, to come up with a hashtag of preteen sex to see what might come up. Anybody could do it. So why don't you have humans, bots, AI, anything, your algorithms doing this? So Jeff and Catherine, the two reporters that wrote this article that's so alarming in the Wall Street Journal today, were asked on Morning Joe this morning on MSNBC what they found. Here's what Jeff had to say. Cut one.
What our review found is that Instagram is actively connecting people who have pedophilic tendencies and are sort of actively seeking to pursue children. And so one thing that we noted is that Instagram will, as soon as you even touch this network of of pedophilic users, Instagram will begin recommending that you sort of push deeper into it.
In other words, they're using the same algorithms that if I was to put in Northern Michigan Golf, that would push me ads for Northern Michigan Golf or push me to content from people that had played there about their experiences up here. The same thing that recommends topic-specific content will also recommend the same stuff to people who are sick, sick people. This is how they conducted the investigation, and it gives you a little deeper look into the machinery behind this. Cut two.
What you were seeing was accounts that were very sophisticated in trying to grow a following. Once one of the, what we might call buyer accounts, connected with one of those seller accounts, the buyer account would likely be pushed other accounts in the network. So even as Instagram systems are trying to depress particularly bad types of hashtags related to CSAM in an ideal world, the recommender system is kind of working against that by nonetheless pushing this content out to people who've indicated an interest either through other accounts in the network or through engaging with particular hashtags or types of images in a network.
And we heard this testimony from Facebook security person. You remember when she went before Congress and she said simply, these platforms are more interested in keeping you on their platform longer and going deeper than they are in protecting your kids or protecting against sexually explicit activity that exploits children. They're more interested in your time spent and their ability to connect you for other goods, but they're also connecting the creeps with the porn and the exploitive material that they are seeking. And the question becomes, if the algorithm is so bloody smart that it can connect someone with these evil tendencies, why isn't it smart enough to flag them so you can take them down? Cut three.
If Meta's system can tell that people want this content, why are they not more on top of it, right? You know, they should be doing better. I think they've acknowledged that they did have operational failures. And I think that's a notable step for them. They have fixed the glitch that was causing them to throw out user reports. They have taken down thousands of hashtags. They have started an internal task force. So in terms of responding to this, while they haven't said they're sorry, which I think is something you kind of suggested you'd like to see, they certainly have been taking steps to try to get the problem under control and maybe urgently.
Alex Stamos is the Stanford Internet Observatory, and he had been Meta's chief security officer until 2018. This was his quote to the Journal. That a team of three academics with limited access could find such a huge network should set off alarms at Meta. I hope the company reinvests in human investigators. Well, that's because he knows that after he left, they laid off the kind of people that were tracking this down. Perhaps I hope that the Journal will put this in front of their paywall so that we can all read it and understand how careless, thoughtless, reckless, and almost demonic that the company running Instagram is, that they didn't work harder. Maybe they will. I'm not getting my hopes up. It's 414 on News Talk 760. When we come back, hate crimes are spiking. What's being done about it? There's a spate of bills. We'll get you up to speed on that next on The Guy Gordon Show. We know since the beginning of the pandemic, the world has become a more violent place, a more uncivil place, a more hostile place. And this is being pointed out in hate crimes and threats against individuals because of their minority status. So the Michigan legislature is now considering a proposal to update our hate crime legislation. It will be the first time in 35 years they've done that, and it comes just as the FBI has published data showing this unmistakable pattern of an increase in hate crimes spiking from the beginning of the pandemic and now into the presidential elections. WJR senior news analyst Marie Osborne joining us with a closer look at the legislation and why some believe it's high time. Hi, Marie.
Hi, Guy. Let's take a look at some of the numbers. The FBI identified more than 10,000 hate crimes in the U.S. in 2021. The Anti-Defamation League says Michigan ranks fifth in the country for the number of anti-Semitic incidents in 2021 and fourth for the distribution of white supremacist materials in 2022. According to Democrat State Representative Noah Arbeth, that doesn't even tell the whole story.
You know, we know that somewhere between 2 and 10% of all hate crimes are reported. So this massive rise that we are seeing is only the tip of the iceberg. And so hopefully this will also send a message to communities that we are taking this seriously.
Andy Arena, the executive director of the State Crime Commission of the Detroit Crime Commission, says it seems that people are just angrier and they also accept more discord than ever before.
A lot of things have become much more acceptable. A lot of behavior has become much more acceptable in the past few years that we just wouldn't put up with in the past.
And he also says the uptick in hate, in part, is due to the groups peddling hate, and they have even easy access to potential new recruits.
You know, to recruit for an organization or a hate group, a terrorist organization, that's how they do it, right? It's all on the Internet. And so you can indoctrinate, recruit, and operationalize people so much easier today than 20, 30 years ago.
Representative Arbeth has introduced legislation that would update sentencing guidelines, make it easier to prosecute individuals who target others for their ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender identity, age, or disability. This week, the Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel and the Wayne County Prosecutor Kim Worthy both testified in favor of this legislation. This is Kim Worthy.
I cannot stress enough, as someone who is in the trenches every single day, and I have been in some capacity for 40 years, we have to protect our victims of hate crimes. We have to let them know that this is serious. We have to let them know that they can be safe in this state. We have to expand our laws.
Jason Plotkins, the executive director of Temple Israel in West Bloomfield, he says that hate speech thrives on attention. So he says it's imperative that they are not identified on social media or in the news. He says in the meantime, interfaith relationships have to be strengthened.
And when something happens in the Muslim community, you know, our community here is reaching out and extending our arms, just like when something happens in the Jewish community. Those other communities, whether the black churches, Muslim communities, et cetera, are extending their arms to us.
And critics have said this law is too vague and it might infringe on free speech rights. Lawmakers, Guy, on Tuesday did not take a vote on this out of moving it out of committee, but Representative Arbeth tells me he thinks these bills will be voted out of committee on the 13th of June, and he anticipates voting them out of the House the week of June 20th.
Marie, you know, we just saw that it had to be about, what, 3 months ago? Maybe it was last fall. Time passes so quickly. But the anti-Semitic attacks on members of the Jewish faith at the temple in Southfield, where yeah. as they were taking their children in, people were screaming horrid things. And so this is all well-intentioned, and it comes from a good place, and it needs to be discussed. I want to just point people to an op-ed in the Detroit News today from David Coleman, who's a conservative lawyer, who says there is, though, a problem with some of the language in this bill. Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Guy. I didn't mean to interrupt. No, I didn't mean to interrupt. Please finish your thought.
Well, the phrase here is, it says, regardless of the existence of any other motivating factors, which could mean, according to David, that if, based on your religious faith and conscience, you are peacefully speaking against a policy or a person advocating something that you disagree with, you could find yourself in violation of this hate speech law because it doesn't recognize the existence of motivating factors like your faith. And so the bar, he says, is so low that people from all ends of the political spectrum could find themselves in violation of it. And Liz, the bar is raised a little higher.
Andy Arena pointed out that there's, you know, a gray area whenever you discuss this topic, hate speech in general, and our free speech. There's just a lot of gray area here. And he said law enforcement absolutely needs to tread very carefully and be very cognizant of what these groups are up to. So that I see this point that's being made here. But we all see, as you pointed out, these egregious examples.
Yes.
There was one just recently here in Huntington Woods at a shul on Woodward where a woman painted something on the side of this building. Yeah. So there's the egregious examples that we can bring out, too. So we have to be able to distinguish one from the other.
Yeah, and we've seen the harm and the fear and the heartache among those that are targeted. So,
yes.
You know, as I said, it all comes from a good place. I think we all agree that we need to address it. We just need to make sure that when we address it, it isn't, you know, with a shotgun, that it's maybe a more focused kind of bill. Marie, we thank you for your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Guy.
Taking this a step further, and I touched on this a few minutes ago with Nolan Finley, and perhaps you missed it, but the Supreme Court is weighing right now whether requiring, not requesting, but requiring that Michigan judges use the preferred pronouns of an individual in the courtroom. So it allows a judge to use other respectful means of address by referring to them as counsel, plaintiff, defendant, or their names and titles. But it would basically allow people that are before a court to say, these are my pronouns, please use them. Well, there were those from the Catholic Conference of Michigan that are saying, well, then you're telling a Catholic judge that they, to some degree, must deny their faith if they don't believe that there is more than two biological genders. In essence, you're compelling speech, and that's a violation of their constitutional rights. But those that represent the LGBTQ community say that when you don't use the proper pronouns, that those that are in the LGBTQ community may feel that they don't have a place in that courtroom, that they are less than compared to those that have more conventional sexual and gender identities. So they're trying to hash this out. And one of the LGBTQ supporters said, something as little as pronouns and a name change might seem insignificant to someone it doesn't affect, but my community does not want to report or testify or be re-traumatized if they know they're not going to be accepted. They don't report crimes as much. But Helen Brinkman, who's a trial attorney, said, look, we have a transcript of these things. And if you use pronouns that are out of the ordinary or out of convention, it could lead to a lot of confusion. And that undermines justice. And variety is the spice of playing when you come to the golf mecca, because there truly is, every course has its own character, and you know that if you play the game. It also has its own level of difficulty and its own pricing structure. So you can really mix and match to kind of fit the budget. If you want to spend a little more and play one of the more expensive courses, you can do that. And then mix it in with those that may be more for the more budget conscious. If you like old courses, we've got those too. And J.T. Ott is the head professional at Gaylord Country Club, which, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, moved?
Right about 50 years ago.
Yeah. So you're coming up on a big year.
We're coming up on a big year. We're going to celebrate our 100th anniversary of being a club. We started out downtown Gaylord. If anybody's familiar with Gaylord, where the Elks Lodge is, where the Elk Viewing in downtown Gaylord is.
And the Kmart used to be.
Yep, behind the Kmart. That used to be our clubhouse until we moved out west of town.
Is the Big Buck Brewery there now?
No.
That would have been a really nice halfway house.
That would have been a great halfway house. A lot of people know it as Gobblers right there on the corner, and then you go just east of that is the Elks Lodge, and that's where it is. And if you look from Gobblers towards the Elk Lodge, there's a little piece of land there on an angle right now still with a tree next to it. That's one of our old greens.
Sure. It's kind of fun to find those. You can find those things on Google Earth, and you can actually see how the course was routed sometimes, and you know, when they've been allowed to go to seed.
But you're out west of town. For those that get off on exit 282 here in Gaylord, if you're headed to Petoskey or up 131 and you want to get there, you've got to take, is it M32?
Yes, M32 is what we're right off of. We're right there, easy to get to. There's signs on both sides when you're going there. And, yes, we are open to the public. I mean, that's the biggest question we get all the time.
Yeah,
we
the word country open. Club, folks may go by and think that's a private course for Gaylordians.
Yes, not at all. We want everybody to come in. My goal is to get you in the door. Because once we get you in the door, you're going to come back and play us again.
You weren't that far from where the Twister came through last year. Did you lose some trees? Did you have any damage?
No, we did not. I had a full golf course. We pulled everybody into the clubhouse, and the sky got pretty ugly. A couple guys went to town to get lunch, and were back within about 10 minutes, and I saw videos and pictures of the tornado, and I said, I better go check the golf course. I had one limb down. So no damage to the golf course. Within 15 minutes of it going by, I had the golf course full again with guys out playing.
Does that tell you something about how fickle these storms are?
It's amazing how fickle they are, because going home that night, I drove down Hayes Tower, a mile and a half down at, trees were across the road, but the testament to the people that are up here, a tree cutting company was out there. They cleared the road, and they were already clearing trees off the houses for free.
You also had a few hundred volunteers come up from downstate to pitch into, and also everybody from the community pitched in. It was really kind of an uplifting moment, a horrible thing to have to go through, but you also found out what your community was made of.
Oh, we did, and everybody that lives up here knows that the community will get together and do that. I actually was lucky enough to work out at Treetops for years. So I was out here, and I think it was about 30 years ago, we had the straight line winds come through and took out a whole bunch of trees on the Jones course, part of the roof on the hotel at Treetops. Town got hit really hard. Same thing happened then. Everybody just came out and said, let's pitch in, let's get everything back to the way it should be, which is what a community is all about, and that's the way the Golf Mecca works together, too. We all work together as a community to try to make it work good for every golf course.
Well, and you know, you've got your big marketing program, which is the Gaylord Golf Mecca, which is, you know, markets all 17 courses. But then you guys individually partner to put together what you think is kind of a sweet combination for your stay and play packages, for instance.
We do.
Give us an idea of who you partner with.
So we partner with any of the hotels or any of the lodging properties in town. Plus also, we got together with Nick Awney up at Black Lake and Judy Mason out at Mishaway, and we put together a great package where you play all three golf courses once. So on your way up from Detroit, you stop, you play Mishaway or Gaylord Golf Club, and then after you're done, you drive up, spend the night at Black Lake, you play golf up there all day, spend the night, on your way home, you play the other golf course. So you get three really good golf courses, and I believe the package starts at $231 a person.
Who designed Black Lake? I mean, that was a really that course made a splash when it came on
the
scene.
That was Reese Jones, the Open Doctor.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, when it first opened, I remember going up and playing it, and it was just a fabulous golf course. The great thing about Black Lake, there's no houses.
Right.
I mean, whereas most of the other golf courses around here have houses. Of course, Treetops doesn't. You'll get a few condos on a couple of the holes, but that's about it.
When you look at where you would price yourself, for folks that are looking for high value, what would an 18 at Gaylord Country Club cost?
So today, right now, it's $65 for 18 with a cart, which is a phenomenal price. You're going to get one of the best products up here. We always pride ourselves on some of the best greens up here. On the weekend right now, it's $75, I mean, for 18 with a cart. So we're priced to get you in there. We're not going to break the bank or anything with
right.
it. And you're going to have a great time. You walk in the door, you're greeted with, hey, good afternoon, good morning, what time are you going out? I mean, we've got the bad kids out there. If you drive down to the parking lot and park, they're going to run a cart down to you, load you up, leave the cart down there so you can drive that cart up. You don't have to walk back up. So it makes it really nice.
You don't
nice.
Make the parking lot off limits? It drives me crazy. There's a lot of clubs that do that.
Oh, I know.
It's
you know, it's getting more than a little frustrating. They even have the carts die at the perimeter of the parking lot.
No,
probably some insurance company makes them do it.
We're pulling our carts through there all day long. Our cart barn's down there, so let's do everything to make it easy for the customer and let them have a great time.
Talk to me about the dining in the Gaylord area, because I used to cover the news up here for TV 9 and 10, and sometimes it was slim pickings, but we always had those great little family-owned joints where you can get the best pie in town, or everybody had kind of their own specialty thing, but you had to know where to find them.
Okay, probably, I mean, it's not here anymore, but probably my favorite restaurant that was up here that was here for a long time, tradition, was Schlenk's Bavarian Inn. I'm sure if you were up
I
here.
I know the name, yep.
Inch and a half thick pork chops, German food, all made from scratch, just phenomenal. But that is now Benetham's. And it's phenomenal. They've got great food, great appetizers, really good happy hour prices. It's going to be a little on the higher end. If you want more moderate but really good food, good drinks, great atmosphere, right next door is the Porterhouse, which is a great big bar, good seating area. They've got a lot of seating out back. You have the Mishaway in the Woods just south of there in the Mishaway Homeowners Association, which is a great restaurant. They've got decks there. And I haven't been to Big Buck since it opened yet, but there's some restaurants downtown, Crave, and all those opening up, and just really good things, and especially downtown Gaylord.
They're all back on their feet since the pandemic. I know that even last summer was tough to find help, especially cooks, and it seems like now everybody's kind of back to normal.
It seems like everybody's back to normal, still a little bit less hours than I think all of them want to do, just because it's still hard to find staff.
Right. Be patient. Don't get snarky if things take a little time. You're up here to relax anyway.
Exactly. I mean, where do you have to race off to? You're going to race off back to the hotel room? I mean, you're going to be there when you're done. Just enjoy the atmosphere. You're up here to slow down. That's the whole idea of Northern Michigan.
All right. If I'm preparing, this is my question for every guy with a golf course. What shot should I be preparing for, or is it just accuracy if I'm playing at Gaylord Country Club?
Gaylord Country Club is going to make you play both ways. The biggest thing I tell people out there is you can spray it a little bit. You're going to get it back in play. Your putter had better be on fire, because our greens are quick, and they're the old style, back to front. You get past the pin, you're looking at a three putt all day long.
Well, my putter wasn't on fire today, but I sure felt like burning it after the 18. That happens up here.
It happens up here.
Yeah, because they are quick. And it's been a great season so far in terms of the weather. And you're keeping ahead of things. In spite of the fact, you haven't had any significant rain here in over a month.
We haven't had any rain. We've got a couple of dry spots, but our superintendent has been there for 38 years. So our dry spots are in the rough. The greens are great. The fairways are good. The tees are awesome. I mean, and that's what all the golf courses that I've been on so far look like. Yeah. But we're all crossing our fingers for rain this Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Bring it on.
A little rain would help, especially since we know. I mean, as we were coming up here, coming out of
Grayling.
Coming out of, well, Grayling had their big fire.
Yeah.
But, I mean, every time you pass one of those Smokey Bear signs telling you about the fire danger, it says extreme.
Yes.
I've never seen that, and I spent a lot of time up here. I've never seen it that high for that long.
No, so, me either. I grew up here in town, so, I mean, this is absolutely crazy.
Yeah, when you come up, do be careful. Yes. JT, have a great season.
Yep, thanks, you guys.
And
thanks,
do
guy.
Visit Gaylord Country Club. Just because it's country club doesn't mean that they won't welcome you. It is public. It's 445 on News Talk 760 WJR. Somebody else getting back in the game after a long respite. We'll talk to our friends at Capital Grill and about the extremely special event they're going to be hosting just a few days from now. That's next. So this is kind of a cool thing Nick just made me aware of, and is it an old friend of mine, and really one of the standout executives in the world of sport, is going to be assuming a new position at the Big Ten Conference. Diane Dietz, who is in the University of Michigan Hall of Honor for her basketball exploits in the early 80s. She once held the career scoring title, I think, for all of U of M basketball, male or female, until the three-point shot came in several years ago. But she was there in the early 80s. She is now going to be a deputy commissioner and reporting to the commissioner. And we know these are difficult times in college sports. We also know this is a time of big expansion for the Big Ten Conference, with the University of Southern California, UCLA, coming in. So kudos to Diane Dietz. She also happens to have a little brother named Kevin who does a little bit of radio here on WJR. So the doggone family is just a bunch of overachievers, you know, but great people. So congratulations to Diane. And it is one of my favorite places, and I got to say, when the family is in for the holidays, there's only one place that we go and get everybody together, and that's the Capitol Grill. And, of course, this past Christmas, didn't have that option because of a devastating fire that hit the famous eatery there at the Somerset Collection in Troy. The good news is they're getting set to reopen, and we are joined by a gentleman who I am sure this has to feel like it's been many, many years. Tim Wilkins is the managing partner there at the Capitol Grill. Tim, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and it feels like a long time being away from everybody, yes.
Oh, my gosh. So it was June of 22. Am I safe in assuming that that you had the same supply chain and materials issues that a lot of us that were engaged in construction and reconstruction had to deal with?
Yeah, that's been the biggest challenge. You know, we'll be down 361 days, and I'll say the last, I'd say 2 to 3 months of this has just been the challenges like that. Of getting the right thing in the right spot to get there. I mean, we were hoping to be back up a few, you know, at least 2-3 months ago, but it's just how it is these days. So we're thrilled to be back, though, you know, and we're thrilled we finally got everything we needed and we got it in, and the place looks great. So it was a challenge. There's no doubt.
Yeah. You guys, I mean, you have such a high standard of excellence, and restaurant work is a team sport. You've got the line in the kitchen, you've got the servers, and it really has to be a well-oiled machine. How do you reboot? Because this is like it's like a team that needs spring training. You've been on the couch for the last almost 11 months now. How do you get folks ready?
Well, we're actually very blessed. We have a fantastic team. We're returning about 95% of our front of the house team.
Tremendous.
Thank you to the people that are near us and that put those folks to work for a while. We wanted to pull them back, so sorry about that. But they're back. Our kitchen staff is at about 65 to 75% of the team that was with us before, and that just speaks to the quality of 28 years, and it speaks to their tenacity to really try to provide that service and that product for everybody. So. You know, we did add some more folks because we're honestly anticipating a crush of business. But we're real blessed that way. They've been training. Actually, we've been in training for about 5 days, from about 7 in the morning to about 4:35 in the afternoon. So a number of them wrapped up about an hour ago, and they're going to go home, get a little rest. And we throw up, the first pitch goes out tomorrow at 3.
Terrific. So that's the official reopening is tomorrow at 3.
Correct. 3 o'clock tomorrow. We're going to run a lighter schedule this weekend just to kind of give the team, especially the new team, a chance. So we're just going to run dinner from 3 to 9 for the next 3 days. And then we start our full schedule of hours on Monday at 11 o'clock. So looking forward to seeing so many familiar faces back.
So that gives you some time to prepare for the big event that WJR has planned for you. And thank you for hosting us. But
oh, we're looking forward to it.
The first Focus Show with Paul W. Smith is going to air live from the Capitol Grill Tuesday, June 20th from noon to 2 p.m. And it is a reboot of a legendary show that is more of a long-form interview show with the biggest movers and shakers. And who better reboot it than Paul W.? And you're going to have a few seafood towers, or what you got planned?
Well, we got to keep some surprises.
Okay.
Got to keep some surprises. But I can promise you this much. So there'll definitely be a seafood tower or so. It's going to be really nice. We've got the whole back room. All the back rooms were redone. There's a very big Detroit theme to all of our pictures and portraits. It's going to be perfect back here for it. We're looking real forward to it because everybody can kind of come and enjoy, and it's a great way to kick off his new show.
It really is, and it's a kickoff of a franchise that, for folks that maybe don't go as far back as you and I mean, the focus was appointment radio for years and years. If you wanted to hear the hottest authors, Hollywood stars, but also the business leaders that would come on and really give us insights into what was happening, also political leaders as well. And I know Paul W. is really excited to kick it off and get started, and I'm going to be moving to mornings, which means that my intent is to be there, but I may be in bed, Tim.
Change a little, yeah, a little shift there. It takes a bit. I've been getting up at 4 a.m. for about the last 2 weeks. Let me tell you, it takes a little bit to figure that out.
Yeah, I'm a 5:15 guy, and I'm backing it up ever so slowly so that it won't come as quite yep. as shock on Tuesday the 20th. But I did morning news for a long, long time, so I don't think it's going to be too much of a change, though, as my boss, Mike Wheeler, says, yeah, and you were 15 years younger when you did that.
That's right.
Thanks. Absolutely. Thanks, Mike, for reminding me of that. Any new menu items that we could look forward to at the Capitol Grill with the reopening?
You know, we've got the menu items that everyone's loved for so long. We go to what we kind of clipped to a summer menu a little bit. We got our cream corn back. The funny thing with being gone, the questions that people have asked us on the phone and written are all those favorites. There's sliced tenderloin. Can they get the sea bass? Is the calamari? All that's going to be there. You know, our menu is very successful and people really count on it. So the great thing is we're coming back with all the core favorites, and we'll have a few things that kind of give people something to think about if they want to go another direction, but all their favorites are going to be there.
Well, we'll be celebrating two things, the return of the Capitol Grill, the return of the Focus program, and Paul's new, much more sedate and normal existence at noon to 2 here on News Talk 760. Tim, thanks so much. Congratulations. Have a great several months ahead.